Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
I feel something going out from my chest, and I see my body lying, and I was flying away from my body. It was a wonderful light. I was in this light. I didn't have a body. I have had only my ego. I could see all things and a very clear perception. Thereafter, sounds of music, very, very beautiful music. It was so, so beautiful.
Anna Ganz Steiner, doctor of medicine, specialized in psychiatry. She was describing her own near-death experience that transformed her from a skeptical scientist to a firm believer in a life after death. Is it hard to die? Where do we go after death? Are we reunited with departed loved ones? And what do the world's great religions tell us about what awaits us after this physical life? These were the talking points in Basel as internationally known personalities in the occult field lectured and gave demonstrations of their abilities. We've all seen those movies, a circle of people holding hands around a table. The lights are dim. Presiding over this spiritualist seance is a deadly, serious, scary-looking medium who goes into trance. A few seconds later, messages from departed loved ones start emanating from the lips of the medium. Or an apparition may even appear in the room to the startled screams of the more faint-hearted of the sitters.
There's a decision you have to make, and it's to do with Mother. And so I have to say to you, from your father, leave things as they are at the moment. It's very hard for you, but the father is very, very happy.
That was one of Britain's most famous mediums, Gay Muir. No dark rooms here. This was a brightly lighted public session in which Miss Muir picked out individuals in the audience and passed on messages that were directed to them by deceased friends and relatives anxious to make contact.
Mediumship is a very natural phenomenon. You see, people do not realize that when we're born, God gives us two bodies. One is a genetic and the other is a spiritual. And we don't have to wait until we die to use the spiritual body. So when I am operating as a medium, I'm extending my spiritual body. Therefore, that spiritual body can touch the discarnate bodies and can communicate. It's almost the same as when you are dreaming, and many times you see a loved one in the dream. I am absolutely sure it's not a dream. What it is you have, in your relaxation, let your spiritual body grow a little bit, and your spiritual body has recognized the visiting entity. But as soon as you wake up and you think, your spiritual body goes back in, and you've lost it.
This concept of two bodies, some, for example, the Hindus would go even beyond that, but to keep it simple, the physical body and the spiritual body. Is this the same as the soul or the spirit?
Yes.
This is one and the same?
Yes. I understand that we're born into this world to learn the ways of life and living. And when we've reached the necessities that we needed to learn on this particular trip, we then go back with our spiritual body to the heavens, and we can remember everything that went before, but we are not encumbered with a painful body. There is no virus in the spirit, you know.
So there's no doubt in your mind that the personality, the memory, everything remains intact even after physical death?
Most definitely. Everything that lives in this world has life force. Call it spirit or whatever you want. And when it dies in this world, it goes to the next world. If it's a tree, it's there in its glory. If it's the flowers, if it's an animal, the animals are there as well. And the spirit body just leaves the dying body and walks straight into the arms of perhaps their mother or their father or whoever they want, maybe their child. You don't know who's there until you see them. There's always someone there who will guide you.
Are these spirits spying on us, as it were? Are they watching every movement?
No, absolutely not. When we are raised, we are taught etic things. Don't go into mummy's bedroom. Don't go into the bathroom if somebody's in there. Don't get undressed in front of people. It's a code of honour, and that code of honour is still there.
If you have that code, presumably other entities do not. They might be voyeurs.
Well, when you're saying other entities do not, then they are not the entities that we in the movement contact.
Is there punishment in the other world?
If you go back to the medieval times, everybody was taught to fear. Do as you're told or else. And that has rubbed its way into the church.
Controlled by fear.
That's right. And in our understanding, there is no fear. God is all love. I can tell you, you know, where people actually come and say, my punishment is seeing the sorrow that I've caused. But God is good. And I'm in the love. And I'm in the light. If only the people of our world would realize that if somebody sticks a knife in the back of you, when they go to spirit, the first person they're going to see is you. And that's going to be a very hard time for them. You punish yourself.
The celebrated British medium, Gay Muir. Another well-known English medium is Alan Stuttle. He attracted considerable attention in Basel because of the form of his mediumship. He's a psychic artist who draws and paints pictures according to instructions received from the spirit world. Mr. Stuttle says he doesn't fully understand how this works technically, but he's absolutely convinced that his inspiration comes from spirits trying to contact the living.
In fact, I've done drawings of people that have come back from the spirit world, and people have recognized them. They said, oh, that's my Uncle Fred, or that's my son, or that's my daughter. And they have come back in a recognizable form. And this is how psychic art works. I feel the energies from the spirit world come into the mind, and they are transferred onto the picture. You can do a drawing of, say, a daughter that has passed into the spirit world, who had a ring given by her grandmother, who used to like to be walking in a particular area. And instead of actually describing them by words, you can use your colour and you can use your pencil, and you can actually draw the places that the person has visited.
One important detail here, are you doing what we might call automatic drawing or painting, in the sense that the spirit takes control of your hand or of your fingers, or do you still have control?
You still have control, but you remember that you're open to the energies of the spirit world.
But there are so many spirits there. How can you home in on just one?
With great, great difficulty, because very often when you're doing a drawing on the an easel, you'll start one drawing, and sometimes they'll argue who's coming over onto the drawing. If you get two people, say a grandfather and a grandmother, and the grandmother was more predominant than the grandfather, they will start arguing, no, it's going to draw me, it's going to draw me, it's going to draw me. So you get to say, I'm sorry, I've got two of you here, so you'll end up drawing two people.
So you have to blow the whistle as the medium.
Blow the whistle, say, oh, stand back a little bit, you know.
I'm curious about the technical thing that happens, the procedure. Do you go into trance, or do you just conduct your life normally, and suddenly you get a very strong impression, I have to get to the canvas, I have to get to the easel. How does this work?
No, when you're doing a psychic drawing, you have a few moments quiet, you sit down and you link in. You don't particularly have to prepare, because you're already prepared. I've done it for 50 years. You know, you already know what's going to happen. Your technical ability is there. You just wait for the feelings of the people to come through.
English psychic artist Alan Stuttle. Life after death was the very first subject dealt with at the Basel Parapsychology Days when they began in 1982. 15 years later, no new evidence could be presented that would convince the skeptics of the existence of a life hereafter. On the other hand, nothing was presented that would disprove it either. In the final analysis, it's a matter of personal persuasion or faith. And in formulating our attitude, we can't avoid religion. So what do the world's great theologies tell us about what happens to us after death? Guido von Arx is a Swiss specialist in comparative religion.
All of them agree that there is life after death. But for the Semitic religions, like Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, officially nowadays, since a few hundred years, they don't accept reincarnation, but they accept that life continues, and if you're a pious person, a religious person, you follow the Quran or the Bible, you go to the kingdom of God in a new body and a new life. Whereas Buddhism and Hinduism say that's of course the goal, to return in the eternal kingdom of God, but you may not necessarily go there in your next life. God gives you other chances to qualify yourself in new bodies, in new forms.
Basically, you've got to be perfect to go back.
Right. And what are these qualifications? Actually, there you can find a common aspect in all religions. They say, thou shalt love God with all thy heart. So if you love God purely, totally, you will return to Him. But if you don't love God, you love more this world, and should you go back to God?
What happens when we die?
Generally, it's a very painful situation. The body is inhabited by consciousness called the soul.
And this permeates every cell, every nerve ending of the body.
Exactly. And death means the soul is separated from the body. The normal souls living in this world, they're attached to that body. So death means you're forced out of that body. And most people are not ready.
What is the best way to prepare for the eventuality of death?
First, you have to know some knowledge. Knowledge means understanding the difference between the physical body and the eternal spirit soul, and that you're different from the body. And religions, the scriptures are there to prepare you that at the moment of death you can think of God, concentrate on God, reunite with God, and return to God. That's the whole process of religion. Religion comes from the Latin word liare. Liare means to link, and re means to link again. It's actually the linking process of the soul with God.
When the soul leaves the body, obviously the question is, where does it go?
It depends. They may have to stay for some time as a ghost, hover above the surface of the earth, and due to attachment, they try to come back either to their relatives or go to the graveyard because their body is lying there.
These are the so-called earthbound spirits.
Right. You always hear that there's so many ghosts around the graveyard. For the simple reason, they're still attached to that body. Some are very powerful and very demoniac, and some are more neutral, and some are even so-called good spirits. There's a whole variety of them. But as I said, they have one big problem. They want physical bodies. That's why they come to Earth to try to enter into certain bodies. It's generally recommended not to open yourself to those spirits because you don't know what's going to happen. And because they have subtle energies and subtle powers, they're generally beyond our own powers. So you expose yourself to something which can become very dangerous. Rather, remain simple, work on this phenomenal physical world and contact the spiritual world through God and the true representatives of God, and skip those subtle energies and spirits and ghosts in between, because it's a dangerous world, as mentioned before.
A lot of evil spirits there waiting to come in.
Definitely.
So we go back to the religious theme again. You'd be much better advised to concentrate on your own spiritual development and leave the departed spirits to their own problems.
Exactly.
The Swiss comparative theologian Guido von Arx, with a collective warning from the world's great religions about the dangers inherent in dabbling in spiritualism. One of the issues at the 1997 edition of the Basel Parapsychology Days, the theme of which was life after death. This is Bob Zanotti.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
You probably can hear, or I hope you can hear in the background, some noise, a bit of clinking and a mechanical noise. Well, let me explain that from the very beginning. We are on a cogwheel rail line, and it's historically very important. Also, the rolling stock, the car we're in, the coach, is more than 100 years old, built in 1893. But of more concern to us is where we're going, because we're going to one of Switzerland's lesser known destinations, at least lesser known in the sense of international tourism. It's called the Schinnige Platte, and I'll translate that more or less in English. It means the shining plate or the shining plateau. A bit of a mystery there. We're going to find out what that means and why it's referred to a little later on. But first, I want to welcome an old friend. He's Hans Zurbuchen of the Jungfrau Railways. And I say that in the plural because the Jungfrau Railways is a network of various lines which serve the Bernese Oberland, the highland area of the canton or state of Bern. Hans, welcome for the first time, but not for the last time, I'm sure, to Switzerland in Sound. You're looking well, and we have a fine day today to go to the Schinnige Platte. It looks like a classic day. Would you agree?
Yes, it's beautiful today. And welcome, Bob. It's nice to have you with us again, and it's nice to have everyone who is listening to us and joining us on our way to the Schinnige Platte.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I have to describe this. There'll be a picture here on the website as well. But I have to describe this because we are in an open-air car. And this is perfect for the summer. It's nature's own air conditioning. When you start climbing up at these altitudes, the air gets rather fresh and cool, even in the hot summers. Let's look at this particular line and also the rolling stock. When was the Schinnige Platte line constructed?
It was built in the 1890s and finished in 1893. We are lucky on this railway line. There was never an accident in 111 years.
That's a pretty good safety record, I think we could all agree. How long will it take us to get up to the top here to the Schinnige Platte?
The trip takes 50 minutes and it goes to a height of 1,967 meters.
And at this pace, 15 kilometers or 9-point-something miles an hour, it's almost like you're doing the walking. You're not whizzing past. You can absorb everything you see. If you look in one direction, just outside, you can touch the flowers. You can touch the alpine flowers and the flora here. And there are hills all around us. And if we look in the other direction, we can look down on the turquoise water of the Lake of Thun, which stretches from the city of Thun to the city of Interlaken and everything in between. And you can even see the lake steamers down there. We'll take a break. We have maybe another half an hour or so in our journey up to the Schinnige Platte, and we'll talk more about it when we get up to the top. For now, let's just enjoy the ride. Well, Hans Zurbuchen, we have arrived at the Schinnige Platte, and like so many of the reports I do about Switzerland, I have to use the same words. What a magnificent view. But we'll have this view on the website. In fact, it's actually very prominent on the website. Part of the view that we have in front of us now is on the home page of Switzerland in Sound. We see some of the highest Alps of Switzerland. We see the trilogy of the Eiger, Mönch and Jungfrau, which is, of course, the centerpiece of the Bernese Oberland right in front of us. We're at a terrace restaurant here with dozens of people sitting outside. We're wearing dark glasses, sun cream, because the sun is so intense here at nearly 2,000 meters, which is something like, well, I can't do it off the top of my head, well over 6,000 feet. And people are just relaxing. They're enjoying lunch. We'll have a little bit of lunch later on, but let's do some work first. Hans, at the very beginning of this report, we talked about the Schinnige Platte, meaning the shining plate, which is the literal translation from Swiss German into English. Why is it called the Schinnige Platte, the shining plate?
We saw when we arrived, the rock is is cut like plates, and those plates they
like
they
a shale almost.
It shines in the sun, especially on an evening if the sun is low. You can see it from all over, as far as you can see, if no mountain is in the way.
How long have present-day facilities been up here? For example, the hotel restaurants and the Alp Garden, the Alpine Garden, botanical garden here.
The hotel was from the beginning, and the Alpine Garden was made in 1927.
As a matter of fact, as we've been walking around here, I've been hearing some English, hearing some French, certainly a lot of German being spoken. I'll be a bit rude and just come over to these people here at a table. Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt your aperitif. I believe you've just had some drinks before lunch. Where are you from?
We're from Yorkshire.
In Northern England, then.
We are from Hull, and it's really beautiful that we have nothing like this in England, and it's absolutely fantastic.
You're together?
Yes, that's my wife, who just spoken to.
And what are your impressions of the Schinniger Platte?
Well, this is my second visit, and you have a little time that you don't come and you forget how beautiful it is till you come back again.
Well, you're obviously enjoying yourselves up here, and there's a third person at the table. Where are you from?
I'm from Bern.
Where's that?
Capital of Switzerland.
We forget that sometimes. Not Geneva, not Zurich. It is Bern, the Swiss federal capital. And, well, have you been up to the Schinniger Platte before yourself?
I have been to the Schinniger Platte many, many, many years ago. And I forgot a bit how beautiful it is here. And it is a great uplift to be up here on the Schinniger Platte.
People talk about a panoramic view. That is exactly what we have. It literally is more than 180 degrees. I can't measure it, but it's well over 200 or 230 degrees. Everywhere you look, left and right and in the center, beautiful mountains. Hans, what is the best time to come into the Schinniger Platte?
It's always the best time.
You're a real diplomat.
when the season starts, that's usually at the beginning of June. It's spring up here. The first flowers come out just after the snow is melted, and then later on we have all the summer flowers, and in autumn it's the best time for the view usually.
It's very clear, the air, isn't it?
And it's usually very, very clear. Yes.
There's something else here, and it goes back a few years. It's an exhibition of teddy bears. Now, this at first sight doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Schinniger Platte. What's the idea behind it?
We met the lady from Switzerland who had a teddy bear collection of 1,200 teddies.
She liked teddy bears.
she still likes them, and she just didn't have enough room for them anymore, and she wanted a place where people can see them, and she gave them to us, and since then we have an exhibition in the Mountain Hotel on the Schinniger Platte.
Let's go and look at it quickly. Then it's just around the corner, up a little bit of a paved ramp here. I wonder about the hotel. We're just entering the hotel, Hans, and you mentioned it was here from the beginning. We're just inside it now. Beautiful grand tour style of the Oberland. We just want you to hear this for a moment. This is the main dining room of the restaurant. It's hard for me to estimate. There must be probably 100 people here, or even more. And we have waiters and waitresses darting around, people walking in with backpacks, and they've obviously been spending some time up here and looking forward to a lunch. Let's leave these people to enjoy their meal. Now let's go and see the teddy bears. And they're having a good time indeed. Oh, I love these hotels, Hans. They have such history. And here, as we go upstairs, there are pictures already of teddy bears on the wall.
When we started to do this exhibition, we thought it was something for children, and we found out that there are people really all over the world who are fascinated by teddy bears. There are people who just come for the teddy bears. It's unbelievable.
What's really nice, all of these teddy bears are exhibited with a scene around them. They're not just static. They're not just a collection of teddy bears in cases. I mean, they're actually, I mean, here's one, for example, standing underneath a mushroom with a backpack. So it's not a theme park devoted to teddy bears, but it has different themes which are treated here. And different sizes. What are the biggest and smallest teddy bears, do you know?
One is as big as a man. Small one, I know, is about 3 centimeters.
Oh, the end of the corridor here. Imagine getting up in the morning. We don't have to imagine, I can see it. Getting up in the morning and looking out on the Lake of Thun. Is that Interlaken down there, Hans?
We can see Spiez. That's at the middle of the lake. And
between Interlaken and Thun.
And Thun. And if we could see around the corner, we would see Thun. It's not far mm-hmm. off the edge there.
And there are people just sitting on the benches out there. It's almost like a religious ceremony that they're doing. They're sitting just staring out, talking to one another, their eyes fixed or going left and right, just trying to absorb the immenseness of the beauty here from the Shiniger Platte. Speaking of beauty, there's another form of alpine beauty here. And in a way, it's the centerpiece of the Shiniger Platte, and that is the Botanical Alpine Garden. Well, you can hear in the background, we have a number of voices around us, a number of people. This is the end of the General Assembly of the society which is responsible for maintaining the real centerpiece of the Shiniger Platte. It's the Botanical Alpine Garden, or the Alpine Botanical Garden. It's a matter of linguistic philosophy. Hans Surbuchen, we're nearing the end of this program, but you've been kind enough to find a leading authority on this subject. Who are we speaking to?
We are speaking to Professor Otto Heck, the scientific advisor of the Botanical Alpine Garden.
How many different kinds of flora exist at this altitude and in this particular climate?
In the Alpine Garden we have about 560 species, different species. In the surrounding of the Alpine Garden, around Shiniger Platte, there are about 500 species occurring in the wild.
So some of them have been brought in from other parts of Switzerland, I presume.
That's right. We try to have all plants existing above the timberline in Switzerland.
There are products, for example, sweets, candies, and teas based on alpine herbs and plants. There seems to be a real pharmacology based around these alpine plants. They do have, many of them anyway, medicinal uses. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And we have a part of our garden to show these medicinal plants.
In fact, I think Swiss folk medicine is largely based on these preparations.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. And this is a living, outdoor, perfectly natural setting. It's a natural museum. There are no buildings here of any kind except the entrance where there's an audiovisual show and a couple of audiovisual aids. But otherwise, you are alone here in nature's own museum. Professor Otto Heck, thank you so much indeed, the scientific advisor to the society which looks after the Alpine Botanical Garden here at the Shiniger Platte at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters in the Bernese Oberland. Thank you so much for being with us. And my thanks also to Hans Surbuchen of Jungfrau Railways for his kind help in producing this program. From the Shiniger Platte in the Bernese Oberland, for Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.